Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE, has ended a contract to hold immigrant detainees with Yuba County Jail about an hour north of Sacramento. The termination ends a contract that dates back nearly 30 years, back to 1994. The news is hailed by elected officials and immigration rights advocates as long overdue because of the facility's record of failing to meet ICE inspection standards. Joining us to talk about their reporting on the end of Yuba County Jail's federal contract is Taiki Hendricks, KQED's senior editor for immigration. Good morning, Taiki.
Good morning, Vicky. Pleasure to be here.
Welcome. So this contract dates back to 1994. That's when Yuba County Jail began detaining immigrants for the federal government. Why did this begin?
Well, you know, I mean, as you say in the top, you're saying, you know, it's long overdue, as advocates and elected officials have said. I think it's worth saying, you know, immigrants or anybody who's incarcerated really depends on their jailers for their health and safety. And so, you know, conditions of detention are really important. And ICE does have standards that were not being met at Yuba. How did Yuba get into the business of detaining immigrants for ICE? It does date back to 1994. County jails in other parts of California have also done this. A lot of them have ended. Yuba's the last one to have an ICE contract because other ones had ended working with ICE. But, you know, Yuba, as a lot of your listeners, I'm sure, know, is a rural agricultural county stretching from Marysville there where the Yuba River flows into the Feather River and through farmland and all the way up into the Sierra foothills. This ICE contract was like $6 million for a while. It grew to about $8.5 million this year. And my team at KQED reported a few years ago on the deep relationship with this ICE contract and the way that it really came to support, you know, the sheriff's department budget. And it really was a steady stream of income as the county weathered ups and downs in the economy.
So it was significant not only for the jail, but also for the region, the multi-million dollar contract going back, you know, more than two decades.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of money flowing into a local government in a small rural area.
You also mentioned that Yuba County is now the lone public facility in the state to detain immigrants that are fighting deportation. What were the biggest changes over the last 28 years since this has been whittled down in California?
Well, I think we've seen a growth in private prison companies coming into the you know, immigration detention space, if you will. And counties like Contra Costa, for example, down here in the Bay Area, have said, like, no, we don't want to hold people for ICE anymore, as there's been more public outcry. And indeed, the state of California saying we don't want to be in the business of detaining people for ICE. So this is the end of a public, like a local government, holding ICE detainees in California.
And it's important to make the distinction. These are civil detentions. These are not criminal.
That's a really good point to make. So this is not a punishment for a crime when you're locked up by ICE. It's civil detention that's intended to ensure that you appear for your immigration court hearing. When you are either an asylum seeker, somebody who's newly come into the country and looking to stay here, and you have to make your case through the immigration courts, or if you're even a long-term legal resident who has had trouble with the law and has a criminal conviction, that could end up taking away your green card and making you deportable, and now you're in deportation proceedings. Some people are held, it's a mandatory thing to hold them in ICE detention. But, you know, the advocates will say, look, this is civil detention. Like, it's not necessary as a way to get people to show up in court.
Yeah. And the jail in Yuba County, it has made headlines in recent years for poor conditions on multiple occasions. What were you able to find that took place?
Well, there's, you know, well-documented poor conditions, and you use the word dangerous in the top. I mean, you know, when you're incarcerated, you depend on your jailers for your health and safety. And so inadequate medical treatment, inadequate mental health treatment, not enough access to recreation, overcrowding. These are some of the things that were documented in grand jury reports and with a long-term consent decree where a federal judge put the jail under supervision because it wasn't meeting, you know, basic standards.
Did ICE ever respond or comment on these conditions at the Yuba County Jail? And did that factor into its termination of the contract?
That's a really good question. The jail has failed to meet ICE's own detention standards. They do periodic inspections and they have a checklist of things. And the Yuba County Jail fell short more than, you know, repeatedly. Did that factor into this decision? ICE is not saying that it did. They're saying this was not an effective use of funds to keep people here. You know, we're paying $8.5 million a year for a guaranteed 150 beds every night. And they were not using, you know, they were the right now there's four ICE detainees at the jail. So they're saying it was a, you know, a matter of sort of fiscal prudence. But you can sort of connect the dots also that there's been a lot of outcry and the jail has not even met ICE's own detention standards.
And there has been a public outcry, as you were talking about, not only from immigration advocates, it also included Congress members, but also there were reports even within the facility that there were hunger strikes taking place. There were also lawsuits against COVID-19 violations. Do you think that this played a role in not only highlighting the problems within the jail, but leading to the termination of the contract? Where does that fit into this?
Sure. Well, you know, for people who are locked up, I mean, your ability to sort of get the word out about your conditions is limited. And so there were some protests, there were people waging hunger strikes. And then they were fortunate to have advocates for the civil rights of immigrants on the outside, lawyers filing lawsuits on their behalf. And I think it really did come to a head during the pandemic. When we were seeing, you know, in the days before vaccinations for COVID, people, you know, all over the country have been dying of COVID. When you're locked up, you know, social distancing is hard. Jails and prisons, and including ICE detention and Yuba, have used solitary confinement as a way to separate people. But that, you know, is very isolating and punitive. And there were federal judges who said, no, this is not safe. And no, you can't keep people incarcerated for ICE. And scores of people were released under judges' orders. So I think that kind of brought things to a head. We also had a couple dozen California members of Congress, all Democrats, who led by Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren from San Jose, pushing on ICE to say, you know, this is not safe, this is not okay, you should end these contracts with Yuba and also with some of the other private detention facilities in California. And so I think that pressure, you know, surely played a role.
And this has a direct impact not only on the jail, but also on the sheriff's office, which benefits and uses the nearly 28 years of a federal revenue, multi-million dollar contract. The right. Sheriff Wendell Anderson, you know, he stands by the jail in response to the termination of the contract. He also said that the jail averaged close to 175 detainees, and the number has gradually decreased. As you mentioned, now it's shrank from 175 to four detainees. Why did the population shrink from, you know, kind of that bare minimum of 150 beds that ICE was paying for down to four?
Yeah, well, as I said, that, you know, the pandemic and these judges' orders led to a lot of decarcerating, and it also showed, you know, that these are people who were still making their immigration court hearings, and maybe they didn't have to be locked up. So the Biden administration has been moving more into like alternatives to detention. And so I think they're using that as another way to do this. So, you know, and it's a lot more cost effective. But that has, as you say, you know, left the county without that revenue.
You bring up a really important point that this also hinges on the administration. And so how did these practices change under the Obama administration, the Trump administration, and now the Biden administration?
Sure. Well, I mean, immigration detention has been with us for a long time. You know, it's ramped up over the last couple of decades. And then under President Trump, there was really a wholesale deportation policy that led to massive detention nationally, up to about 55,000 people in ICE detention on the average at the peak. With COVID, that fell way, way down to about 14,000. So a huge drop off. Right now, there are about 30,000 people in ICE detention. So the Biden administration is using more of these alternatives to locking people up, but they are still, you know, holding plenty of people in immigration detention.
And we're talking about public facilities. Yuba County was the lone public facility to house immigrants, but are there other immigration detention facilities that exist in the state? Because you also touched upon how this is kind of shifting to more of a private facility enterprise.
Yeah. In California now, we have only private prison companies, big corporations, the Geo Group, CoreCivic, and another one or two. There are half a dozen ICE jails. They've been used as state prisons at different times and so forth, and these companies sort of repurpose them. They're all in the Central Valley or Southern California.
And as we're learning, it is profitable when you have multi-million dollar contracts with the federal government. Are the conditions at these private run facilities the same, and do they face similar scrutiny as a public facility like Yuba County did?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have faced a lot of criticism over conditions. And as I said, this group of members of Congress from California have raised concerns about Mesa Verde, Adelanto. There's a whole series of them that have been under scrutiny. And when you are a private corporation, you're answering to your shareholders, and the profit motive is the primary thing. So there could be a lot of cost cutting. I would say under President Obama, the federal system said, we're not going to use private companies for federal prisons, and they moved away from it, but not in terms of ICE detention.
Hmm. We're focusing on California. Is there a larger shift taking place of public facilities losing federal contracts with ICE?
Well, Yuba was the last one for California.
What about that? Do you know if this is happening elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're seeing a trend specifically around the public facilities, but we are seeing the Department of Homeland Security, which is ICE's parent agency, scrutinizing where they're holding people around the country. And they have closed over the last year four or five facilities or terminated contracts with both jails and private prison companies.
Taiki, this is also happening. This contract will be terminated in like February, but this also comes with potentially the end of Title 42, which is expected to end in December as early as this Friday. What kind of impact do you think this will have on immigration enforcement as it continues to evolve?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to have to see, but the people who are held in immigration detention are, as I say, you know, sometimes these newly arrived asylum seekers, and other times they're long-term residents who have had, you know, criminal convictions that make them deportable. We're seeing with the folks who are coming to the border more of these alternatives to detention, electronic ankle monitor that's connected to GPS, a facial recognition, you know, smartphone app or telephonic check-ins where there's a, you know, voice identification. And these things, I mean, pennies on the dollar, they're much less expensive for taxpayers. It's sort of $8 a day on the average, as opposed to $150 a day. And so I think we're going to see more of that for asylum seekers. The Biden administration has brought back a pilot program that the Obama administration used, which was a case management program where there's more like human contact and saying, you know, we're giving you a legal orientation so you understand how the system works and here's where and when you're supposed to show up. And there was like 99% compliance with that. So I think, you know, there's a lot of promise there. But I don't think immigration detention, ICE detention, is going away anytime soon.
We're talking about, you know, when you're talking about the GPS monitoring and it being cost effective and also having this pilot program educating people on the systems of how things work here in the United States, that is, it's practical and there's logistical benefits. But there's also an argument I would imagine advocates would make, immigration advocates, that it's also more humane. Finally, Taiki, do you think that this is part of a larger shift in the change of enforcing immigration?
Well, as you say, I mean, it is more humane, you know, not to be behind bars, to be able to, you know, be living in your community with, you know, your family, your children, be able to go to your job if you're working. And I think very critically, it's much easier to find a lawyer to represent you in immigration court, to build, bring the materials together to build your case. And so people with lawyers have a much, much better chance of, say, winning asylum than those who don't. I think, you know, there's competing pressures in this country and people who are concerned with the civil rights of immigrants, with these due process rights. And at the same time, you know, folks, there's a kind of a fear mongering about immigrants in our society as some kind of a threat. Talking points from Republicans about sort of the uncontrolled border. And so I think I don't know where this is headed. I think we need to keep following it. But you know, there is a strong movement of pressure to say immigrants don't have to be locked up in order to make it to their immigration court hearings.
Taiki, thank you so much for sharing your reporting.
It's my pleasure. Great to talk with you.
Taiki Hendricks is KQED's senior editor for immigration, sharing their reporting on ICE terminating its contract with Yuba County Jail. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.